Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to the Not the Top 20 podcast. We're talking EFL. We haven't missed a Monday pod all season and we weren't about to start now. But due to our clashing schedules, a very busy week of work for George ahead of Cheltenham Festival next week and my own mini getaway on Sunday and on Monday, we have conspired to give you 20 minutes worth of George and I chatting about a couple of topics from across the Championship, League One and League Two. We've also got a special interview, special guest Neil Kilkenny. Now, I hope those of you who have listened to the last few weeks of the podcast, who follow us on Twitter, will crack a smile at the fact that we've been able to get Neil on the line. He is captain of Perth Glory. They are top of the A-League and they are our favourite team in Australia. Ever since the Glory account followed us on Twitter the other week, we've become massive fans. Of course, it's been a real pleasure to develop this and a great laugh as well. So to be able to talk to Neil, who had a long career in English football as well in the EFL with various teams, Birmingham, Leeds, Bristol City and Preston, to name just a couple of them. It was great to get his insight on life in Australia and some of his memories, a particular memory about sending off at Preston or with Preston against Port Vale. It is worth the wait. And also a couple of thoughts on Ken Bates. They didn't necessarily see eye to eye when Kilkenny left Leeds. So we're thrilled to get a chat with him as well. So in general, the running order for this one is normal pod chat between George and I, then interview with Neil Kilkenny of Perth Glory. And then just to finish, I'm going to give a couple of brief roundups for those of you who didn't have as close an eye on EFL football this weekend. We do feel it's our job to keep you updated. So I will be doing that with some very brief 5 minutes on each league roundups, just to touch on some of the major stories and to flag up some interesting things that happened, some things I noticed over the weekend, just to make sure that you're not going lacking when it comes to EFL pod analysis. So let's get into it. First of all, my chat with George over the phone earlier today. We spoke about various topics, starting, of course, with Jack Grealish. We have been able to get George on the phone, a very busy man, but we're glad to get your thoughts on a couple of topics from the weekend, George. And I think the only place to start really is with events at Villa Park and specifically Jack Grealish, because you are chairman and founder of the Jack Grealish fan club, not including Aston Villa fans, of course. And it was quite the return from injury. And I imagine you watched it with some smile on your face.
Yeah, I thought it was as good as it gets when he played the ball over the top for Abraham for the first goal. One of those balls, one of those turns isn't measured in an assists column because Tammy then obviously squared it for Conor Hourihane to score. But then what happened afterwards was obviously unbelievable. And it's just great to see a guy who, you know, in the 13 games that he was out for Villa, Villa only won two of those games. I think they lost five in the seven games either side, taking that 20 game period. The seven games either side, they've won five and drawn two. So it's been quite funny on Twitter the last couple of days. I think my tweet was obviously there to provoke a reaction and it got that reaction.
So your suggestion is that Grealish by June 2020 might well be going to the Euros with England. And of course, he's one of those players for whom many opposition fans, that they don't necessarily agree with that sort of opinion. And that came across in the replies.
Slightly. Although I guess, you know, 700 odd likes suggests that some people do agree with me as well. And yeah, I do think that if he gets the move that we all assume he will, injuries aside, I mean, he'll show in the Premier League very quickly that he's an elite footballer. I'd be interested to see what the betting would be on him being in the squad next summer, because I think he certainly should be. And it's just funny seeing opposition fans. I mean, it really seems to have annoyed Leeds fans, which is quite amusing. And people who don't really notice their own bias, I guess. I mean, I'm just someone who watches on. I mean, Pablo is the one that comes out quite a lot. I'm a huge Pablo fan. I think I even said last season that I thought he was one of the best players in the league. And we waxed lyrical about a lot of Norwich players as well, Brendier being one of them. But just the lack of understanding from a lot of people on the Grealish thing. I mean, people talking about goals and assists. I think a lot of people still think that he's, you know, a genuine number 10. And what they don't realise is the role he's playing is a much deeper one. His ability to play in tight spaces and to work the ball out of dangerous areas into attacking ones the ability to turn defensive situations into attacking ones is such a massive, massive skill of his. And of course, drawing fouls, whether that is the morality of that, I will leave open. But being able to win countless free kicks for your team is a massive skill. So, you know, people who, I don't want to use the word triggered, but it feels a bit like the Raheem Sterling stuff, where people just seem to have this massive issue with him for whatever reason. But I'm quite happy to make these bold claims, because I thought it was going to happen with Spurs in the, last year, but in a year's time, people suggesting that he's no better. I mean, just now someone tweeted me saying that that his stats, and by stats he's pointing purely at goals and assists, don't show someone who'd walk into a bottom half Premier League team. I mean, not only would he walk into most of them, he would quite comfortably be most of their best players as well. So it's one of the things that I'm the most excited about in football at the moment, is being able to look at Jack Grealish when he does make his move and prove to everyone how good a player he is. There's going to be a lot of people who, I mean, knowing the way the football fans are, will probably still reject what's patently clear.
You mentioned about his ability to draw fouls, especially with the likes of Hourihane in the team who can deliver. We've touched on that before, but I mean, his dribbling stats in terms of what he can do when he's not actually taken down by the defence is massive as well. His dribble success rate is so high, and it just creates so many opportunities, because as soon as he beats his man, of course, someone else has to come across and deal with him, and it can create situations where Villa have overloads out wide and coming inside the pitch as well. And I think without him, you saw with no one else particularly strong when it came to dribbling, they were struggling to break down teams who defended resolutely, who sat deep perhaps. Now with Grealish as the X factor, they will start to create more chances just because of his ability to beat his man. Derby fans, from what we've seen, were very happy to put their hands up and say, yeah, fair enough. I think most of them are converts now after seeing his performance on the weekend. But a word on Derby and Frank Lampard, because it's you don't want to overreact, and you don't want to say the same things every year and say they always collapse in February and March at this time, because I think each season is different. But in this specific incidence, what are you making of Derby's current run and pull form? And I suppose with the context of Lampard in his first season as a manager, what about his role and what you've seen from him so far?
Yeah, I think it's pretty difficult to be positive in any way about Frank Lampard's current managerial form. It's been a steady decline all season. They started out okay, but slowly the performances have been getting worse. The results have been getting worse, and we've said for a long time that they just seem to completely lack a discernible style of play, and that is a massive, massive concern for a footballer who is, you know, personified by his own style of play. I mean, people still talk about, I mean, when Tom Kearney came late to a ball on TV on the weekend, the commentator straight away referred it to Frank Lampard, which is, he hasn't played in the Premier League for a few years. So to be a manager and a player of, sorry, to be a player of that ilk and a player of that standing, to then be seemingly so lacking in an understanding of what wins games of football is a massive concern. You know, we've said all season that the reliance on, at times early in the season, Mason Mount, then Harry Wilson, wasn't sustainable. We're now seeing how that's, you know, come to pass. Harry Wilson having a shot from a free kick after an hour or so against Villa and being cheered, ironically, by the home fans, really kind of, sorry, the away fans, sums up the season to an extent. So it's going to be interesting now. I mean, I'm by no means writing Lampard off as a manager entirely. I mean, the idea that he's being linked to the Chelsea job is absolutely absurd. Obviously, I mean, if his name wasn't Frank Lampard, there's no chance that would be happening, and he's not doing anything to suggest at the moment he's ready for that top job. That's not to say that he won't be in the future, and it's not to say he's not going to learn a great deal from what he's doing at the moment. But I think we're now going to see just how much Lampard, I mean, he wants it. I doubt he was expecting to find himself in this situation a couple of months ago, where not only were they going to be struggling to stay in the playoffs, but I'd say it's now looking pretty unlikely they're going to get there. So it's going to be a big couple of weeks. As you say, you don't want to overreact. It's his first season. He inherited an ageing squad. Adding Ashley Cole to that squad, you have to question the logic there. But the next couple of weeks, in my opinion, given the position they're in, is going to tell me a lot more about Frank Lampard as a manager than necessarily the last couple. As you say, you don't want to overreact. So it's going to be, I mean, how he's going to solve the issues is going to show what kind of a manager analysis he's got.
Yeah, we've got a couple of topics in League One and League Two that I wanted to ask you about before you have to go. Before we move on to League One, in terms of Football Index, just to touch on this week, the fact that we have got them to add new players this midweek. So if you already have a Football Index account, listen up. There are some EFL players going on the market. And if you haven't, of course, you can check out the site and then sign up if you fancy it using our code NTT20, which gives you £20 extra on top of a £20 deposit. And here are the players, George. I'm just going to list them, the ones that are being added. In the Championship, we've got Ben Godfrey, Bersant Salina, Alan Brown, John Fleck, Adam Reach, Callum Robinson, Kerim Marabti. And in League One, we've got the likes of Jack Stacey from Luton, Marcus Brown from Oxford, and Pelly Ruddock and Panzu, also of Luton. We've also got Elliot Embleton, who's on loan at Grimsby from Sunderland, and Jordan Rossiter on loan at Bury from Rangers. And we've got Giovanni Brown into the mix as well. So many of you emailed us with your requests, and we've been able to get some of those up on the site. So do get involved with Football Index if any of that sounds interesting to you. In League One, George, we're going to go managerial here to start with. Gary Bowyer in at Bradford. What are your thoughts on that appointment?
I mean, it's a good appointment. He's someone who's had to work with owners with more issues than Bradford, and he did. So he did what a ridiculous job he did at Blackpool, and also obviously he did a good job at Blackburn too. So he's a manager who seems to relish the challenge of a crisis club, Bradford. I mean, that run of form they went through under David Hopkin a couple of months ago feels so far away now. I mean, again, absolute turmoil in the squad. There seems to be a real personality issue in that squad, both at the start of the season and in the last couple of weeks. We've seen just real dissent from the players and a complete relationship breakdown between the fans and the players as well. So he's got a big job on his hands. As I said last week, a lot of bad teams down there at the bottom of League One. So it's going to be quite a difficult league to get relegated from, in a sense. But I think Bowyer is a sharp appointment, and they've done well to get him.
Hard to argue with that. You'd hope, even though the contract is only till the end of the season, you'd hope from Bradford's point of view that if they do go down, he would stick around. A bit of stability needed. And Gary Bowyer, someone that we like a lot. What about Keith Hill leaving Rochdale, one of the longest serving managers in the EFL? Rochdale very much down in the mire in League One. They've got the worst defence in the whole of English football. Was it a surprise to see him go, considering his time at the club, George?
I don't think there's anyone they can get in, really, who'll be better than him to try and get them out of League Two next season if they do go down. So I saw a tweet that made me laugh, where one of the fans reacted saying, where are we going to find a manager who can work on a shoestring budget and get the best out of a pretty poor group of players? And someone replied saying, I think Keith Hill's available, which kind of sums it up, really. It seems, I mean, it's, the fact is, in a 24-team league, irrespective of of the job that you do, some people have to fill the bottom spaces. So for someone like Keith Hill, who's done an unbelievable job so often in the past, to be occupying one of those spaces now doesn't feel like a sackable offence. It's quite clear that he is someone who's done wonders for the club in the past and has got them out of difficult positions before. And yes, the back end of last season was difficult and they only survived by the skin of their teeth. So it is back-to-back campaigns of struggles. But there shouldn't be the expectation of them to do any better. So I'm not necessarily surprised. I'm disappointed for him. And I think they'll struggle to get anyone better.
At the same time, we are seeing, at least on an intensely short-term level, that for some clubs, the change of manager, even if they are, as some are saying, the best manager in their recent history, as some Rochdale fans are saying about Hill, many of them still saying, and yet we still do think this is the right decision just for the next 12, 13 games, because I guess if you are able to stay up based on a little boost from someone, a boost from somewhere, the likes of which Bristol City have got in the same division, then that would probably be worth it on a short-term scale to stay in League One.
Well, whilst I understand what you're saying, it just doesn't seem, you know, I'm a believer that the manager bounce is a bit as a myth. Sometimes better managers are going to get a reaction out of you. But given the fact that Hill specifically, we're in this situation last season, turned the club around and got them the points they needed to stay up, I just struggle to think there's anyone in a better position to do so. And to make that decision on the back of being beaten by the best team in the league, and not well beaten either. You know, it took Luton an hour or so to break them down. I think he at least deserved another couple of weeks.
Worth pointing out, I think in his defence as well, that they lost Andy Cannon, one of their best midfield players in January, and defender Harrison McGaughey as well, and not particularly well replaced, I think it's fair to say. Lastly, in League One, George, the top four all won, so same as you were. But is there anyone out of them that you'd like to praise this week?
Yeah, I think it's only fair to give Sunderland a doff of the cap. I've said my piece about them in the past, and I still believe that they were very, very poor indeed, and were unbelievably lucky to be occupying the position they were in. But now they look like they are ready to pick up the pieces if one of Luton or Barnsley drop the ball yet again against Plymouth at home. I mean, these are fixtures that they should be dominating, but they are dominating them now. I mean, previously in the season, they were playing these teams at home, and if they were getting the win, it was in no way convincing. Whereas now, again, this Plymouth game, they dominated both the data side of things. Will Grigg missed one really easy chance and had a couple of chances. So they're getting the ball into him in dangerous areas. And I still think that Luton and Barnsley are quite clearly the two most likely to go up automatically. But I do think Sunderland, you know, are there to are there poised in case they do slip up. And if they maintain this level of form to the end of the season, then they'll be the rightful favourites for the playoffs.
Yeah, they've played six league games in the last 22 days. Of course, they drew the first three, but three wins since then. And lastly, before you have to go, just in League Two, I guess one of the big things that happened this weekend was the playoff battle opening up massively with Tranmere's win against Exeter and Colchester's defeat against Swindon. But in terms of the top, well, in terms of the automatic spots, it does now look like four going into three automatic spots with Lincoln, Bury, Mansfield and MK Dons. What's your current view on your top three as is? Or do you think MK Dons could punch their way in?
I think MK Dons will punch their way in, but I wouldn't want to say who's going to come out. I think that right now MK Dons are arguably the best team in League Two. It's hard to really pick a fault with any of them, to be honest. So I think that MK Dons will pick up the points needed to force them into that top three. But I'm not sure who I think will make way at the moment. I mean, I'd be reticent to say Lincoln with the points on the board. Bury are a team I'm so, so keen on. And Mansfield, you just have to wonder if maybe it'll be one of those two who slips back. But you know, they score goals at absolute will, and home form is obviously huge as well. But it's certainly going to be an absolute thriller. Shame to see a couple of the guys, you know, Forest Green going through another sticky run, which means they're probably going to be out of it. But it's going to be a hell of a race.
It sounds a bit like in the Championship, where I think you said the other day you quite fancied no playoffs, just send Leeds, Norwich and Sheffield United up. That only seems fair. Yeah. It might be a similar thing in League Two. George, I know you're working this evening and working practically every hour of the day at the moment this week, a very busy time for you. So, cheers for being able to call in and make sure that we get something down for the Monday pod.
Exactly. Hopefully I haven't annoyed too many fans. The Sunderland fans should be happy, and Grealish fans too.
It's not about pleasing people, remember. It's about giving your good analysis.
Opinions, yeah.
Well done, thanks, mate. Okay, speak on Thursday. As you guys know, we are massive Perth Glory fans. We have been for just over a week now, and we're absolutely thrilled because there's nothing better than to talk to your heroes, to talk to the people whose name you cheer every week. And that's exactly what we've achieved. We spoke earlier to Neil Kilkenny of Perth Glory, an EFL legend, formerly of Birmingham City, Oldham Athletic, Leeds, Bristol City and Preston. He's now part of Perth Glory, and we spoke to him earlier. All the way from the other side of the world, at Neil, we are very recent but absolutely dedicated fans of Perth Glory. So it's great to chat to you, a key man in the squad and someone with plenty of EFL experience earlier in your career as well. Can you talk us through the move from English football to Australian football that you made a few years ago, and I guess the main differences in style of play between the A-League and, say, the Championship?
I made the move a couple of years ago now. Obviously, my contract finished at Preston, and I just thought, have a bit of a change. So I thought, come over here. And to be honest, I really enjoyed it. It's a good way of life, and the football, there's probably, it's not as much of a battle. It's more of a, you know, there's more football. I feel there's a bit more football play. Maybe not as quick as the Championship or League One or the Premier League, but you have to be a lot more technical on the ball, and I'm really enjoying it. The teams that I've played for over here, you know, they play through the thirds, and sometimes, you know, in the UK, the ball gets played forward a lot quicker and misses out the middle third and goes up to the top, and you play off the second sort of thing. So I think, obviously, you know, they want to play through the thirds, like I said, and that suits me really well.
What do we need to know as new fans of Perth Glory? For example, what sort of formation, what sort of style would you say you guys play? How would you sum it up to someone that hasn't watched you guys play?
We play a 3 at the back, 3-4-3 formation. Some people would say a 5-4-1. A bit like Tottenham have been playing, and it's a bit of a fashionable formation at the minute to play. And we've got a good team, you know. We've got a lot of experience that's played over in England in the Championship and in League One. So, yeah, we've got a few players. And obviously, we've got the manager who played over in England in the Championship as well in the Premier League, so Tony Popovic. So, yeah, so we've got a lot to like at the club, especially from the English game.
Yeah, and the season's going exceptionally well. You're 8 points clear at the top at the moment of the A-League. You've only lost one of the first 20 league games, but coming top of the regular season league table, that's not where the true glory lies in the A-League, is it?
Yeah, it's a bit different over here. It's sort of like a playoff at the end of the season between the top six. Obviously, the team, if you come first, you get a bit of an easier run to the final. And yeah, so it's basically like the playoff final, where everything boils down to one game at the end of the season. A lot of people over here look forward to that more than the so-called the league winners. So they want that big off game at the end of the season, which, you know, it's enjoyable.
You mentioned that you're managed by Tony Popovic. You've got Andy Keogh up front, who had a long career as a goal scorer in the Football League. I've been told that you absolutely live and breathe the sport. Are you able to keep up to date with football over in England, with some of your former teams, for example? Is there any team that you keep a special eye out for?
It's easy to keep track of the teams that you've played for and against, the leagues that you've played in. Obviously, the Premier League, you can watch every game live. It's just the time difference of being in the middle of the night or late at night or early in the morning. You get the Champions League, obviously, you can watch as well. And then you get selected games in the Championship and League One. So, yeah, you get to follow it. And, yeah, I obviously look out for all my old teams, which I'm sure most players do.
I just wanted to ask for a couple of memories from your time in the EFL.
Yeah, it's fond memories, you know, playing in England. Obviously, getting promoted with Birmingham to the Premier League and from the Championship to the Premier League. And then, obviously, moving on to such a massive club, Leeds, who I would probably say that, you know, I look out for them a lot. So, and getting promoted, meeting Manchester United, and probably in my last season there, we probably should have got promoted again. We come seventh and we had a strong team. And, you know, looking back now, it's a bit disappointing that we didn't actually get promoted to the Premier League. But, and then because we had the team. And then, obviously, moving on to Bristol and then moving to Preston, which obviously got promoted again. So, yeah, I look out for all my old teams and, yeah, all them promotions, playing in the Premier League, playing against top clubs, are a massive fond memory for me.
With Leeds, Bristol City, Preston and Birmingham all in the top half of the Championship and mostly sort of trying to get promoted either automatically or through the playoffs, and we'll hope you'll be keeping an eye on that. There was a bit of controversy surrounding your move to Bristol City, by which I mean there was a bit of a back and forth with Ken Bates, wasn't there?
Yeah, you know, he's a very opinionated person and he had a lot to say about it. Me obviously leaving Leeds when they offered me a deal, but I didn't feel that they offered me my worth. And at that time, he was trying to get a lot of people for very cheap. So, you know, I decided to leave and went to Bristol. And, you know, obviously, I answered a few of his questions by scoring against Leeds when we played them, which was a satisfying day not the fact that I scored against Leeds, but the fact it was in front of Ken Bates was brilliant.
And when I tweeted about us being Glory fans the other day, and I mentioned yourself and Andy Keogh and Tony Popovich, we had a reply from a Preston fan saying that your sending off for Preston at Port Vale will live long in the memory. Do you mind telling us exactly why that would be?
Yeah, I remember. I remember it funnily. It was a funny day. There was a bit of a scrap off the ball. Someone got kicked or punched, one of the Port Vale players, and our top scorer at the time, Joe Garner, he actually did it, but I got mistakenly sent off. And then he stayed on the pitch and scored two, and we won. We won with them two goals. So, yeah, it was a funny situation, but at the end of the day, you know, I took one for the team, and I'm glad that we did because, like I said, he went on and scored two.
I hope maybe he shared some of his goal bonus with you that day.
No, he didn't. He got the ban, and I got away with it. So, like I said, I took one for the team that day, but I'm glad that we won the game with two goals on him.
Absolutely. We know you've got to get back to training and preparation for your next game. So just got one final question. I've seen you described, Neil, as a manager in waiting. Obviously still very much playing and part of a successful team, hopefully for a few more seasons. But is management something you're looking to move into?
Yeah, definitely. I feel that I've got plenty more years to go playing. But when time comes, I'll definitely move into coaching. Hopefully one day management. I'm learning a lot, especially for under the manager here. He's very good, very, very detailed in what he goes, how he wants things. So I've learned Again, I've played under some top managers, top managers that have been promoted many, many times under Steve Bruce and Simon Grayson. So, and there's a lot of promotions there. So hopefully, you know, that experience and working under such people, such managers, hopefully will help me in the future. And, you know, and I'll get the opportunity to manage and coach when I finish my career.
And in an ideal world, do you think the first opportunities, the first post-football role, would you be sticking around in Australia, or could we maybe tempt you back to England?
Oh, I don't know. You know, the opportunities, it depends on opportunities. Football's about opportunities. Whether playing, coaching, managing. My family is settled here at the minute. They love the lifestyle here in Perth, and I've got three young kids. So we'll wait and see. But like I said, I've got plenty more years to play in. So hopefully in the future I'll become a coach and a manager.
Neil, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck with the rest of the season. We'll be keeping a very close eye on it. It's just fantastic to get a bit of perspective from your side of the world.
Thanks very much. You guys take care.
Now, I'd like to make sure that you guys get your money's worth. I say money's worth. I mean, you've never paid a penny to listen to NTT20 pod, of course, but you know what I mean. Didn't want to make you feel shortchanged with a reduced podcast. So here are some roundups for the Championship League 1 and League 2. Now, these will be monologues. It will just be me talking. For some of you, that sounds unbelievably boring, I'm sure. So please feel free not to go any further. But for any of you who'd like a quick roundup, an overview of what happened across the EFL, then see how you get on. I'll start with the Championship and some impressive wins at the top, with Leeds United demolishing West Brom on Friday night. It's not energy that's been lacking from Leeds in recent weeks, despite what many would have you believe. The results haven't been there, but it's actually been execution going forward and breaking teams down that they've struggled with. That wasn't an issue once Pablo Hernandez fired them ahead after 15 seconds. Leeds went on to score a couple more fantastic goals, and Bamford with two of them. For West Brom, let's not overreact to a defeat at Elland Road, but this did add fuel to the fire that was a concern I raised last week about the current system, with Dwight Gale out left and Rodriguez through the middle in a 4-3-3 type formation. This seems to me detrimental to the team's attacking ability, and I think we saw that play out again on the weekend. But again, this is a defeat at Elland Road to Leeds, the league's best home team, so we won't overreact to this one for West Brom. We'll get more of an idea about issues or otherwise in the next few games. We knew Millwall would score from a set piece against Norwich, and of course they did, but who would have thought Norwich would score a header from a corner against Millwall? That's what happened, with Zimmermann heading in, and alongside a Stieperman goal early on, and another one of those lovely sweeping Norwich team goals finished by Pookie, of course. It's still Norwich at the top over to Sheffield United in the Steel City derby on Monday, which is after we record. In the playoff places, Borough and Bristol City both drew. Middlesbrough with Blackburn and Bristol City with Preston. I think Borough at Ewood Park did create the chance to win the game. Asamoah Longa particularly guilty of missing one glaring opportunity. Bristol City and Preston, as we said, they would be in the betting show. Very well matched. That was a good even game. It was important, I think, for Bristol City not to lose that one, and they achieved that with an equaliser from Jeju. Birmingham have now had a year of Gary Monk in charge, and what an absurdly good job he's doing, keeping them up on final day last season, leading them to eighth place this season, just 4 points off the playoffs. Of course, only one player has been added in each of his transfer windows so far. Unfortunately, this weekend they were swept aside by a Jared Bowen inspired Hull City. Their own miracle maker, Nigel Adkins, after the game, making a huge deal out of the 50-point mark being reached. He's putting massive emphasis on that. Hull have clearly avoided relegation, and that is an unbelievable achievement in itself. But many of their fans will be looking upwards. Same with Birmingham fans. Both of those teams are on 50 points, just 4 points off the playoffs. And Nottingham Forest are also on 50 points. They lost at Stoke on the weekend. They'll feel a bit hard done by. Many teams have gone to Stoke this season and come up against an insipid Stoke in some form of chaos. But this wasn't the case on the weekend. Atebo, Allen and Afobe playing to the level that was expected, that was hoped for back in August, and producing a fine performance and a comfortable home win. The atmosphere at Villa Park was noticeably different as Jack Grealish captained his side to a 4-0 victory against Derby. We discussed both Grealish and Derby in the conversation with George at the top of the podcast. Swansea and Brentford recorded comfortable home wins against Bolton and QPR. And the middle of the table is now ridiculously bunched at just 10 points between Bristol City in 6th and Blackburn in 17th. The big question is, with 11 or so games to go, who will finish the strongest? Because there's plenty up for grabs still. Swansea had really Bolton to thank for their win. Craig Noon and David Wheater being sent off, down to 9 men. The resistance was finally broken, despite a sterling performance from Remy Matthews in the Bolton goal. Today, Bolton's training ground was closed as financial problems continued to pile up for the club. As reported by Mark Isles, a fantastic local journalist reporting on Bolton Wanderers, the majority of Phil Parkinson's team were not due to train on Monday, but peripheral squad players not involved in that game on the weekend, as well as medical and support staff, were informed not to report to the training ground because there'd been no available food, drink or supplies. The situation is clearly precarious. It's hard not to feel sick to your stomach, really, with worry, mostly. Wanderers did not pay any of the staff their February wage, which was due last Thursday. So there's issues with the future of the football club, but there's also bigger issues on a human level with many of the staff not being paid. Mark Isles adds that attempts to sell the club, which is clearly necessary, appear to have stalled this weekend. So one to keep an eye on. Really, really bad news coming out of Bolton today. The situation has reached an all-time low, really, which is saying something because it's been such a poor few years. As for Brentford, they swatted aside a QPR side that did frustrate them in the first half. Bees' home record, though, the second best in the league. And in the end, Benrahma, Mopai and Canos did the damage for a resounding win against their rivals. Now, at the bottom of the table, with Ipswich and, you'd say, Bolton pretty much done, things got very interesting with the third relegation spot. Massive wins for Reading and Rotherham have, you have to say, sucked Wigan and Millwall very much into the relegation battle. Reading had an amazing away day at Ipswich, a late winner from Mo Barrow, an incredible, you know, once in a season type goalkeeping performance from Emi Martinez, doing the business for them. And Rotherham, they beat Blackburn 3-2 at home. Semi Ajayi with 2 goals, such a threat from set pieces. Ajayi heading in on the full from a Will Volks long throw. What it means is there's only 3 points now between those four sides, Reading, Rotherham, Wigan and Millwall. So it's getting incredibly tense at that point. And you have to say the change in atmosphere at Reading under Jose Gomez, the absolute tenacity that Rotherham have, and George has spoken about how much he rates them and how they've deserved more in so many games. You have to feel slightly worried if you're a Wigan or a Millwall fan, because it's fair to say that those sorts of atmospheres, those sorts of feelings, if anything, are going the other way, with tension and worry starting to sneak in. At the top of League One, all of the top four won this weekend. So very much as you were there. What that means, of course, for those of you whose standards have been slipping, is that Luton are top on 75, Barnsley second on 70, Sunderland third with a game in hand on 68, and Portsmouth in fourth on 65. Now, Luton, it felt like they were always going to beat Rochdale. Such is their dominance in all home games, and that's what happened. But it didn't happen that easily. Rochdale clung on for a little while. In the end, it was Collins, of course, and Hilton, who needed a goal, who hadn't scored for a while, and had people, including myself, questioning whether he was the best partner for Collins. I've got a real thing for Kazenga Luar at the moment, and he came off the bench with another cameo. I think he completed more dribbles than he did passes, and that kind of sums up what he's offering this team. His ability to beat a man is absolutely fantastic, and gives them something a little bit extra, something a little bit different, I think. Credit to Luar for contributing so much to Luton's title challenge, especially as someone who's always played on the wing, a team playing a diamond formation. It doesn't seem like an obvious fit, but he's carved himself out a role. And whether it's from the start or off the bench, he's been electric. And essentially, especially at the end of games, more or less impossible to stop, such as his pace and dribbling ability. Jack Stacey stood out as well for a fantastic run down the right in the build-up to the first goal. A fullback in Stacey that can contribute that much going forward, that can beat a man with the reliability that he does, and still be part of a solid back four. It's just absolutely fantastic. He's been one of the players of the season in League One. Barnsley won at Southend with 10 men for most of the game. They were without Kiefer Moore as well for this one. And they moved from that 4-4-2 that we've seen with Moore and Woodrow up front and Mowat and McGeehan in central midfield to 4-3-3 as a result. And you know what? If needs must, I quite like it. I really like the fact that it allows Dougal to sit at the base, to pass forward to Mowat and McGeehan, and allows them to kick on and really contribute in an attacking sense without being worried about leaving themselves open at the back. And it worked very well here. Cavare deserves a shout out. The right back did the job of two after the right winger Brown got sent off. And just a nod to the centre backs as well, Lindsay and Pinnock. It was evident, and this game live on Sky as well, plenty of people will have been watching with interest. It was evident in this game just how good they both are. A little weird to see two left-footed centre backs. You don't see a partnership like that very often. Pinnock playing right centre back, but very much favouring his left foot when passing it out. Sunderland, they are on fantastic form, aren't they? Jules mentioned them in our chat earlier. They've played 6 games in 22 days. They've drawn the first 3 and had 3 wins since then. They played very good football against Plymouth and dominated the game. The confidence is back. Leadbitter and Catamol in the double pivot. All singing, all dancing, those two. And Honeyman had a very good game as well, capped off with a goal. Portsmouth beat Bradford 5-1, and after 8 winless games, it's exactly what they needed. An absolutely brilliant penalty from Evans to get them going. And looking at the starting 11, we spoke about their solidity earlier in the season, and a big part of that was stability and a regular starting 11. That all knew their roles and were carrying out their roles very, very efficiently, very effectively. And it's kind of back to the majority of that starting 11 now. Aside from Ben Close, who's in the Ben Thompson role, Thompson having returned to his parent club Millwall, where he is impressing their fans in the Championship, and Burgess playing centre-back instead of the injured Watmore. Other than that, it's more or less the standard team, and Lowe and Ronan Curtis were back on form in this game against admittedly a shambolic Bradford, who have brought Gary Bowyer in to turn things around. George has mentioned why he thinks that's a good appointment in the short term. Defending from set pieces and from the wide areas was just shambolic in this game from Bradford, one to forget for them. Doncaster and Charlton, 2 playoff teams currently, they drew at Donny. This reflected that these teams are on a pretty similar level, really, and very competitive game. Donny thought they'd won late on. I personally couldn't see why the winning goal was disallowed, and that was a shame for Doncaster fans. They were rightly upset there. Just below the playoffs, Peterborough beat Wickham 4-2. This was the Marcus Madison show. Two goals and two assists. A fantastic free kick into the top corner. A right-footed goal, which you don't see that much from Madison. But we spoke about him a few weeks ago, didn't we? Talking about how, in terms of usage, the fact that he really is, at times, a one-man attack for Peterborough, in the sense that you might normally see in the NBA with a gunner, as they would say, someone like Kobe Bryant in the old days, doing it all. Well, this was a fantastic example of that. I did note that Darren Ferguson changed shape slightly here, a 3-4-1-2. So wing-backs playing Marcus Madison in the hole and Lee Tomlin as well playing centrally, nominally up front with Godden, but kind of false nine kind of vibes drifting all over, and not too many defensive responsibilities. Now, on paper, and it's only been one game, you can kind of see how that makes sense. Trying to get the best out of Madison and Tomlin, trying to make sure that their priorities are offensive and not leaning on them too much defensively. This kind of makes sense to me. I'm really interested to see how Peterborough play if they stick with this system over the next few games. Coventry got a great win, 1-0 at Accrington, and Bright Enabakare, it was a really well-taken goal. He picked up the ball centrally. He beat his man with ease and curled it into the corner. Looking at his dribbling stats, this guy is absolutely elite. A bit like Lualua, who I mentioned earlier, Enabakare on loan from Wolves with a mixture of skill and ridiculous pace. He has made a big impact in his short time at Coventry, and I don't want to just be saying this for headlines and whatnot, but Coventry are 5 points off the playoffs. They would have to continue this very good run. I think it's 3 wins in 4 now to have any chance, of course, but they have been impressive in terms of XG ratio all season. On balance of play, they are a team that creates more chances than the opposition, and if they're taking their chances, that bodes pretty well. Another one to keep an eye out. Below that lot, you've got Fleetwood drawing against Gills. Gillingham's good form continues. Probably unlucky not to win this one. Tom Eaves climbed above James Husband for the opening goal, and Husband, thankfully, made up for it, curling in a brilliant free kick to get Fleetwood the draw. Again, Fleetwood over recent weeks, another team who have been quite impressive, and you wondered whether they might make a playoff bid. It looks like they'll be building for next season, but definitely in terms of teams who are setting themselves up to improve over the summer and to go again next year, very much one to keep an eye on. Burton drew nil all with Walsall. Not a huge amount to write home about here, apart from two fantastic saves from Brad Collins, Burton's on loan goalkeeper from Chelsea. Really top class goalkeeping on show. Bristol Rovers thrashing Blackpool. Johnson Clark Harris with a hat trick. Clark Harris is a really interesting player because 3-4 years ago, playing for Rotherham when he was just 20-21 years old, he showed qualities that any team would kind of look for in a striker. He's big, he's strong, he's got an unbelievable left foot. If one of his goals, you can see the power that he's got in that left foot. And he had a bit of pace as well. Now, he had such a horrendous injury, he basically missed over a year of football and had to sort of start again, didn't he, with Coventry last season in League Two on loan and then being made permanent in the summer. He's now with Bristol Rovers permanently. And that deal, which was done on deadline day, again, massively overreacting to one hat-trick, of course, but just in terms of the qualities that he has that I don't think many strikers at League One level do have. For me, Bristol Rovers went from having really poor striking options to now a really good striker option in Clark Harris. And their record under Graham Coughlin is pretty good. They're still in the relegation zone. But just in terms of the feeling around the club and compared to the teams around them, it does feel like Bristol Rovers, especially with a goal difference that's -2, which is significantly better than anyone else down there, it kind of feels like they are looking upwards compared to a lot of teams around them looking downwards. Oxford beat Scunthorpe 2-1. This was an even game that was kind of decided by some gloriously terrible defending from Scunthorpe and not dealing with two decent crosses and Sinclair finishing both his first goals for Oxford there. And right at the bottom, Wimbledon, you kind of felt like they really did need to beat Shrewsbury on the weekend. They didn't beat Shrewsbury. They drew 0-0 They didn't create much all game, Wimbledon. I said on the betting show, I quite fancied them because I thought this game would be very clogged in the centre of the park with both teams playing 3-5-2. It's exactly what happened. Shrews, to be fair to them, did manage to create many more openings than Wimbledon and were the most likely winners, but couldn't get the goal. It was as stodgy as I thought it would be that game. Right, let's wrap things up with a League Two roundup. For those of you still with me, thank you. This is a lonely task, I must say. I am missing George here, but I think it's important that we do make sure that we're rounding up the three divisions as we normally would and all the key results. And we weren't able to do that because of our schedules. So in League Two, again, really the theme of the weekend was the top teams winning across the EFL and the top four all won here. It looks like four going for three spots, as we touched on in my chat with George earlier. Lincoln unbeaten in 12, Bury four wins in a row, Mansfield two in a row, MK Dons four in a row as well. Lincoln beating Forest Green 2-1. Now, this is a game that always has a bit of needle. From back in the National League days when these guys were gunning for promotion against each other, and it was not as tasty as it has been, I think it's fair to say. Lincoln, look, they've got 6 points more than any other team away from home, and they got the win. They've got characters in the team. They've got experience, of course, in Bostwick and Frecklington and O'Connor and Shackle, but they're so well coached as well, and that's pretty evident. I think they are just so clearly effective in what they do and executing clear plans that they're given, and you have to give the Cowley brothers great credit for that. So as well as being a team with great mentality, and in John Akinde a top goal scorer as well as the 96th minute equaliser he scored in midweek against Exeter, it was two goals for him in this one. And Forest Green, who started the game well, we're not able to pick up any points from this game against Lincoln. Bury had a routine home win against Macclesfield. Jay O'Shea with his 16th goal in all competitions, which when you consider he is very much a central midfielder, part of a two alongside now Rossiter, previously Dan's, it's very impressive. It was a penalty, of course, and those have boosted his numbers, but plenty from open play as well. Nicky Maynard with his 16th in just 26 league games as well. Since Boxing Day, Bury have had 8 wins and 3 draws. It's all going exceptionally well there, you have to say. The same can't be said for Macclesfield. Some of their players not being paid fully for their February wage. They're still 4 points from safety. That sort of stuff, of course, undermines the work that Sol Campbell and his staff will be doing. And with 4 point gap between themselves and Port Vale, the positive is Port Vale's own poor form and the fact that Macclesfield have shown some quality in the last month or two, but results just dropping off slightly. Mansfield beat Cheltenham 4-2. Four goals for this Mansfield side without a suspended Tyler Walker. Perhaps a surprise. CJ Hamilton with two of them in the first half. Mansfield drew 12 of their first 23 league games, and they've only drawn one of their last 12 with 7 wins in that time. So being able to turn those draws into wins, even if it means maybe going too far and losing the odd game that would previously have been a draw, not necessarily a bad thing. Sam Binch, who's a Stags fan, singled out Willem Tomlinson. They picked him up on a free after being released by Blackburn. He's a talented player, created a number of chances from midfield in this game. MK Dons got their fourth straight win against Crawley. I think the general consensus was that Crawley acquitted themselves very well here and probably were good for a point at least. But it was a brave winner from Kieran Agard, and MK Dons march on. They had that blip, didn't they? Dropped all the way down and out of the playoffs, but now very much looking like the team waiting for Bury or Mansfield or Lincoln to go on a blip of their own. The teams in 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th at the start of Saturday all lost, and it's really opened up the playoff battle. Hard not to be quite excited about this now. Tranmere, for example, went up 3 places from 9th to 6th, 13 points from their last 5 league games. They've only conceded 1 goal in that time. And this winner against Exeter from James Norwood was the story. Not just because he is banging them in and has been all season. He's 6 clear of the next challenger in the top goalscorer battle in League 2. But also because he was an Exeter player for 2 years, about 7, 8, 9 years ago when he was in his early 20s. They gave him a chance, Exeter, I think it's fair to say. And they have this fund at Exeter that fans pay into at the start of each season. I think they pay £19 each per month. and that money goes towards paying the wages of one specific player. It's a fantastic thing. It's really brilliant. And as a fan-run club, it's just another way of fans feeling close to the club, close to the playing staff, and creates that fantastic atmosphere. Well, James Norwood was the player whose wages were being partly funded by Exeter fans when he was an Exeter player. So that was an interesting twist because it didn't work out for him. And of course, he spent the interim period in non-league, scoring a lot of goals. This is his first full season in the EFL, and well, he's only going one way, isn't he? With his contract up at the end of the season, there's a lot of worry from Tranmere fans that he'll be poached by a League One club, potentially a Championship club, and with his quality, you can see why that would be. Swindon beat Colchester 3-0, another result that really opened up the playoff places. A few good examples of Wellens ball here. Obviously sat down with Richie Wellens last week for an episode of NTT 20 Meets, and he was explaining his philosophy, explaining how he thinks that a high press and a patient possession-based approach, but striking when you've got the opportunity, he thinks is the way to take this club forward. And I think Swindon fans are fully on board. And why wouldn't you be if you project his points per game since he's been Swindon manager? If you look at that league table in that time, I think they're fourth in the division, so they would be challenging for automatic promotion if the season started when Wellens had taken over. All very positive stuff. Colchester, we know, do chuck in the odd shocker of a performance, and I think they were in this one for the most part until a couple of goalkeeping errors, so maybe not too much to worry about, except for the fact that it makes the league table very exciting. From Exeter in fifth on 55, with Tranmere also on 55 in sixth, Forest Green and Colchester 7th and 8th with 54, and Carlisle 9th with 53, and Swindon 3 back on 50 and 10th. You've still got Stevenage and Newport, maybe Oldham and Grimsby, who think they could get into the playoffs if they were to win basically every game, but it seems unlikely. Oldham and Stevenage drew. Jose Baxter scored a lovely goal in a week where he revealed in an interview with BBC just how much his demons have affected his career. A fascinating story, and I implore you to Google Jose Baxter BBC interview, because it's hard not to feel great empathy for the journey that he's been on, and also thankful really that he's still playing football and still scoring good goals, because there was a point, as we remember, where he, as a youngster at Everton, was so highly rated, and now doing the business for Oldham, of course. Stevenage always seem to have late drama in their games at the moment. That was the case here, as they got a late equaliser up at Boundary Park. Ilias Chair didn't get it. He did hit the bar with a free kick, which would have been the winning goal, and he's looking absolutely sensational for Stevenage on loan from QPR. Newport beat Carlisle 2-0. Sounds like set pieces were the difference in this one, and how often have we said that? So impressive that this Newport side, despite the fact that every team will go into games about them knowing their threat from set pieces, it doesn't seem to make much of a difference. They just consistently create chances every game from these, and that was the difference in a what was otherwise a tight game against Carlisle. Grimsby had a massive off day and lost at home to Cambridge, who, as an away side, did not go into this with any form to speak of. Russian Hepburn Murphy, the number 9 for Cambridge on loan from Aston Villa, he was very impressive in this one. We got a Sunday scouting report saying he looked quick, a very well-taken finish for the goal. I believe that was his first professional goal, or his first professional league goal, certainly. The Grimsby fan who tweeted is saying, any faint chance of playoffs gone for us. No hope there, it seems. And the nice story was that Colin Calderwood said he would take this Cambridge team for a Nando's. They've been meeting pre-game, before home games, at Nando's for a team meal. And their home form's been very good. They sort of thought maybe this was a reason for it. So Calderwood said, OK, if you win away, I'll take you to Nando's. So that's what he's done. Northampton beat Crewe 2-0. Now, Northampton's Twitter account tweeted on Saturday evening that if you extrapolate Keith Curl's period in charge of Northampton, then they are just outside the playoffs in terms of how they've done since he's been in charge. So quite impressive, really. Crewe normally so good at home. They couldn't get anything going. Their Twitter account a bit salty after the game, tweeting about Northampton's roughhouse tactics, which was very petty. Very petty, caused much mirth. Yeovil got a massive win against Morecambe, didn't they? They went behind in this game, and not a team that has got a particularly good home form, of course, to be able to turn things around with some goals from Tristan Abrahams and beat a Morecambe side normally so well versed in these relegation six-pointers. A huge, huge 3 points for Yeovil. And Notts County and Port Vale drew 0-0. So the situation at the bottom is Notts County bottom on 29, Macclesfield 23rd with 30 points. Then a four-point gap to Port Vale just above the relegation zone. Morecambe are 1 point ahead of them. And Yeovil now 1 point ahead of Morecambe. So still all to play for there, but not looking very good for Notts County or for Macclesfield. There you go. I hope that wasn't too horrible. I mean, hopefully there's some interesting stuff in those roundups. Hopefully for those of you who like to listen to the pod in order to get the news from the weekend's EFL action. Well, even though it was difficult to do our usual style podcast, hopefully there's some good stuff in there. So thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back with a betting show this week. And we appreciate all your support, of course. All your retweets and shares are hugely appreciated as we look to finish the season strong. And that is it from us.